Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley, as always, back in the studio today. It's a rainy day in California, which is rare, so good time to be in the studio. We've got a great show for you today. Now, bear with me. Believe it or not, even though this topic is going to sound like I don't have a great show for you today, I feel bad for CPAs, Lou. Right? Like, you
too.
Have this, right? Like, you know, they're like, oh, what Lou does is not exciting.
Yep,
but I'm actually excited about this show. So I've got my friend Lou Catalano from Munn CPAs in the studio today.
What's up?
And we're going to be talking about brewery taxes. In my case, taproom taxes. And then we're going to talk about some accounting practices and things like that. And the reason I'm sort of making fun of it, too, is it's not a show that I ever thought I would be doing. And it's because I'm kind of a buffoon when it comes to numbers. It's not a language that I speak very well. But I met Lou early on in the pandemic, and you've been so incredibly helpful since then that I've since learned the importance of a quality CPA. And this is not an infomercial. Lou is not paying me. It's really based on my experience working with you and how things have really changed for me by working with a pro like you.
Awesome, man.
So I'm not only thankful for what you've done, but it did kind of open my eyes to things that I actually care about. I didn't know I cared about it. Right.
Well, I gotta say, it's a real confidence booster to have to be caveated for 5 minutes. No, seriously.
Yeah.
No, guys, this is going to be great.
Yeah,
this is going to be great. Lou's great. No, trust me. I know you're bored already, but just
totally.
Stay with me. So
hang in there with me.
I appreciate
it. Good point.
Well, no, I appreciate it, man. I'm super excited to be here, and we love this industry. We love working with folks in this industry, so it's fun to get to be able to share a little bit of information out there, so appreciate it.
Perfect. Well, we're going to dive into a whole bunch of it. First, I want to say thanks to More Beer, our sponsor for today's show. They bring you this show and every show that we do. Go over to morebeer.com and check them out. Maybe grab yourself some Viking malt. I just had a More Beer collaboration beer they did with Altamont Brewing Company. One of my favorites. And they used all Viking malt. Fantastic, clear IPA. Go check them out at morebeer.com and thank them for supporting the show all these years. Okay. So, Lou, we're going to dive right into it, but I do want to talk a little bit about your history. And so, interesting how I met you. I had done a couple of pandemic shows like early on.
Yeah.
And it, I think it was like me and Nico from 2NA.
So, yeah.
And, you know, back then we're all, our mind is like scrambled with what the hell is happening with the world. And you reached out to me afterward and you were like, hey, there was some good topics you had in there. If you need any, you just were being kind. If you need any help or assistance, you know, let me know. And I think very quickly, like a couple weeks later, I was like, oh, Lou, I need a lot of help and assistance. That's how we met.
Yeah.
How long have you been a CPA?
I've been doing this for a little more than a decade.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Got it. Where'd you go to school? Just out of curiosity.
You know, I started at University of Hawaii, down in Manoa.
Nice.
And finished up here in Sac State. I'm from California, so
okay.
Finished up in this area.
And Munn CPAs is your firm
yep.
that you're a partner at.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
And
yep.
where are you guys based out of?
We're based out of Sacramento area. So my office is in Roseville, which is just a little suburb of Sacramento. We've got locations in Glendale, one in Hawaii, actually, up in South Lake area as well. So we're, I like to say we're on the larger end of small.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
And are you a home brewer or you're just into beer? Like, why did you start listening to the show?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I started home brewing, 2010, something like that. So
okay.
a little bit before I was doing a different job at the time that was mind-numbingly boring. And I started finding podcasts. I found your podcast. I found home brewing about that time as well.
Nice.
And, fast forward a few years, doing the CPA thing, starting to work on building my own book of business and the clients. And one of the things I love about what I do is, you know, I get to be pretty entrepreneurial in who I work with.
Hmm.
And so it's like, man, I'm going to spend all day working with my clients.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick people who are doing cool things in a cool industry. And, you know, obviously beer is cool and people like drinking beer, but brewers in general, they're really passionate. And I know you know this about their community, about their process, their artisanal, all these things that are the type of people I like being around. So it was a very natural fit. I know a little bit about the process.
Right.
Of course, it's also nice to have clients who can make better beer than, of course, I ever could. I know you can relate. It's like, hey, you guys make the beer. I'll take a look at the numbers and come buy your beer. So that works out well.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. So you still get to do what you love around people that you love.
Exactly.
And,
I
do think it's helpful in an industry like ours, which also can be very artistic, right?
Yeah.
To have people that you can relate to, even if it's not your favorite subject, right? Like,
totally.
Just the fact that you're into beer, I think, probably helps people out.
Yeah. And I think the role of accounting in general is to kind of bring order out of the chaos, right? And so mm-hmm. So if I can step alongside somebody who's really passionate, and this is very, I know you know is really passionate about making great beer, investing in their community, all these things, and I can come alongside them and be like, hey, let's put some structure on the financials here.
Yeah.
Let's figure out, are you trending in the right way? Let's make some plans for the next year and the next couple years, or at least be a person to call when you want to buy another tank. Hey, is this a good move, or can I afford it, or how do we write it off? Those sorts of things. If I can come alongside and add value in that way, that's a way that I get to be a part of an industry that's cool that I care about, add a perspective that you're not getting a lot of other places. You know, when you're a small business owner, you kind of end up out on your own island, right? So it's like you don't have anyone. You know this.
Yeah.
You don't have anyone to sit down and talk to about this kind of stuff. And so we get to be that for them.
And I also think certainly for me, so I was reluctant to call myself an entrepreneur for like a decade after starting the Brewing Network, because I didn't think about things in those terms.
Right.
What I was thinking about was content.
Yeah.
I was thinking about beer.
Yeah.
I was thinking about being funny. I was thinking about how do I hone in my interview skills? Like mm-hmm. I was thinking about everything except for the bank account. And partly because the bank account was sucked and it was scary and it was depressing. And I didn't really grow out of that even when we did better.
Right.
I just started to kind of hire people to help me with it. So like I have a bookkeeper that you know that I've had for years, right? And once I did that, I started to become more comfortable with numbers because I could ask for help like you're talking about.
Right.
I could ask for like some points of reference because before that, you know, I'm just not the sharpest tool in the shed when it comes to business. I'm a good marketer. I'm pretty good at this podcasting thing.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call myself a good business person, right? And so to have, people to bounce ideas off of, and instead of, I guess what I'm getting at really is a lot of my decision making would come out of thin air and it felt like magic. Like if I didn't feel it in my soul, we didn't do it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a terrible way to run a company. you can't have all of it, the feeling in your soul.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some tangibles.
Well, it's also important though for you to focus on the craft that you're good at, right?
Yeah.
And then find the right people to help. But you got to have, you know, you got to have your eye, you got to know where to look. You know, you had a podcast a couple of weeks ago about somebody who didn't know what they weren't looking, where to look, and,
right.
and it cost them, right? So you got to know where to look and what to pay attention to. And that's where, you know, I love to be able to train people on that and just to be a part of the journey with them. But yeah you focus on doing this and I'll go do this and we'll all be happy.
Absolutely. And some of those dollars, you know, I've also always been on a shoestring budget. So sometimes you're reluctant to pay for these services, you know, especially when you, so I kind of grew up like, figure it out and do it yourself. Like that's how my dad was, right? Oh, and I think a lot I think a lot of people in the beer world are like that too. Like if you start in craft beer, it's usually not because you went to Stanford and could have been a doctor. It's usually because you're a little more grassroots and like, you know, pull everything up by your bootstraps, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, a problem that comes along with that is not wanting to spend a little money like where you should. Like when I finally hired a bookkeeper, you know, and she told me her monthly amount. I of course went, oh God,
I can see the bank account.
And I got my dad's voice in the back of my head. Okay. Shut up, Dad. You're actually wrong about a few things. And one of those is spend money on some good resources, right? Or good people.
Yep.
So
I had the same experience. I keep beating the same exact message into my head in areas that I'm not the expert in, right? And the most recent one, I feel like I've learned the lesson, but apparently I still need to teach myself. This spring, height attack season, I'm super, super busy. And I drive a pickup truck and the brakes start squealing. And I'm like, you know what? I've done brakes before. I used to work on my cars, you know, when I was in college and totally broke and literally couldn't afford to pay someone to do it, right? And I'm like, I've done it. Honestly, I can do it in the garage. It'll be faster than taking it to the shop. I just do it. And, you know, long story short, of course, it's a newer truck, so you can't just take the things apart. I can't just take things apart. Ends up, you know, I pull it out of the driveway. It's throwing codes. It's actually capped. I have a warning that it's capped at like 43 miles an hour. It won't let me go above that speed because it's like in brake failure mode or something.
Wow.
So, you know, I end up spending way more money, way more time trying to do it myself. And so I'm in your same boat, man. I keep relearning the same stupid lesson.
Totally.
That apparently I can't get to stick.
The car one is still one for me too. I do the same thing. And then I'm like, no, dude. Dude, just stop doing this.
You get into it, you're like, why? I regret this so much. And yet here I am. And then there's the humble pie of like, okay, guys, I know you know how to do this. I know I made it worse, but here's my mess. Can you please fix it?
Yeah.
And don't ridicule me too much.
Totally. I'm the same. All right. So you get into being a CPA. You go to school for this.
Yep.
You also get into home brewing. But and then is that what sort of steers you toward? Because obviously breweries aren't your only clients.
No.
But at some point you're just thinking about like these are the people I want to work with.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's a great industry. You know. So we have a pretty large, a pretty significant footprint of breweries that we work with at this point. But yeah, it started just with that. You know what? I know how to home brew. I understand the language. I understand the process, which means I understand some of the equipment and the inventory cycles and some of those things. And so let's go and see what we can do here. And it's been super fun. We get to work with a ton of brewers, and it's been cool.
Do they all try to pay you in beer first, and then they're like, all right, we'll just send you a check?
I've had a few people come into the office with beer, which is great. You know,
sure. Yeah,
we've had one or two meltdowns in the office over that as well. So
nice.
We try to keep that under control. But yep.
All right. Well, let's dive into some of the things that matter to us. And I think before getting into like some tax law and some tax advantages, we should probably talk about accounting first, right?
Yeah, like, man. That's the backbone.
Because if the money doesn't come in, we're not paying taxes on it anyway.
Right.
So we should probably figure that out first.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was thinking about maybe like Lou's accounting. I don't know if you want to call it accounting 101 or maybe just some of your like best practices
that
we could think about as a brewery.
100%. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. You know, about half of our time, maybe a little bit less than half, is spent on the accounting side of it, making sure things are accounted for properly. Is your balance sheet tie it out? Does retained earnings tie? Mm-hmm. These sorts of things. For many, you know, of our brewery clients, you have a lot of partners in a partnership. You've brought in a lot of investors.
Yeah.
And so in that case, there's even a higher level of scrutiny or at least expectation of, hey, we want to do this right. And everybody wants to do it right. It's just,
sure.
I don't know what I'm doing. Money came in. We did stuff with it, you know, those sorts of things. So yeah, 100%, you know, we spent a lot of time on the accounting. And then from there, hopefully we get to a place where we're profitable, we're growing, you know, we've been in a major growth cycle for the last decade. And obviously things are a little bit different in today's world, maybe not quite a decade, but, you know, the goal is to make some money here.
Yeah.
What do we do with that? How do we keep some of that money? Where's the wise ways to reinvest it? That kind of a stuff is what we look at for sure.
Okay. Excellent.
So yeah, if you want to,
let's do it. Yeah. Just give us some basic, best practices.
Yeah, absolutely. So, when I think about accounting, when we sit down with folks the first time, and this can be for new breweries. I was telling you before we got on, I've given talks before about, hey, you survived your first few years as a brewer. Now what? You can come up for air a little bit and look around and say, okay, now what do we do to actually make this thing work? But candidly, with the viewpoint we have of a lot of breweries, there are folks who have been doing this for a decade plus who still haven't quite made those leaps into, kind of like you mentioned, mm-hmm. into getting a little bit more sophisticated. So anyway, when I look at that stuff, on accounting, the first thing I want to hit people on, we're assuming that you've got bookkeeping happening mm-hmm. and we're assuming that you are reconciling your bank and credit card accounts. That's step one. So let's just say we've all gotten there. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. From there, the next thing we look at is inventory. That's really important to me. And that's a little bit counterintuitive because your inventory, I don't know, we're buying stuff and we're making beer and whatnot. But why inventory is so important is the way accounting works. Inventory really drives what your cost of goods sold is going to be.
Okay.
And I need to know what your cost of goods sold is so I can know what your gross margin is.
Got it.
The gross margin is basically after you spend money on all the inputs to make your product.
Yeah.
That's labor. It's also, it's your raw materials, your hops, your grain, your yeast, all that kind of stuff. Packaging obviously is a big one that's growing significantly for most of us. The amount that's left over to cover all your overhead, that dollar amount, that's your gross margin. We want to keep a close eye on that.
Yeah.
For a lot of folks for the last, again, we'll say decade. I know, it's the last couple of years have been different, but
sure.
for the early part of the teens, right? The growth curve was so crazy and everybody's selling beer over their own bars. Your margins are really good.
Yeah.
So you don't have to pay a lot of attention to it. But as things get tighter, these are the things we really got to watch.
Yeah. So my partner here, they're no longer partners anymore, but Marty, and we've talked about him on the show.
Yeah.
Great guy, great mentor of mine too. He used to say, and it sounds like a silly statement, but it resonated with me here at the bar.
Yeah.
He just said, money solves all problems. And what he was talking about is like, when I was combing over like, well, how many people came in? How many tickets did we do? What are our margins? And they were looking weird. He was like, well, if we do enough revenue, none of that matters. The margin, that's how you fix your margin is if you can increase your rep. Now times are tough, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that easy. But that still always sticks in my head.
No,
that,
yeah.
Because I would go like, oh, well, that's a very expensive thing to buy.
Right.
And you're like, but money solves all problems. If that thing that we buy brings in more revenue, then it costs nothing.
Totally.
You know?
And I think it is easy, especially as a, again, you're kind of doing this on your own, you're winging it. That's you're not winging it, but you're just trying to figure it out as you go.
Yeah.
It's very easy to focus on those costs. So I definitely care about those costs and we need to control them.
Yeah.
And especially as you grow, and certainly if you're trying to be a production brewery, which is a very difficult, tough putt in today's environment, but not undoable. Those margins are extremely important, but it's very easy to focus on the cost. And it's like, this is all great, but if we grow that top line by 10%, all these other metrics fall right into line. So, hey, maybe that's where, and then, we talked to folks about, as a little bit daunting or what's the word I'm looking for, but doing the trivia nights, making sure you're doing mug club. Are you doing the things? And I know those get boring. You run a bar. That stuff becomes a grind, right?
Yeah, but you got to do it.
And it's also very cyclical because there was a period of time when trivia was huge, and then it really died.
Yeah,
and I think what we're seeing is back a bit now. But that's are we doing the things to drive that top line? Because but we got to be driving the top line. And also, are we keeping an eye on those margins? And so that's where that inventory, that's like always phase two. Step two for the folks that we work with, generally speaking, is, hey, how good are we with inventory? And it doesn't have to be, I don't want to belabor it too much here, but it doesn't have to be a perpetual inventory. I don't need to know every day exactly what it went into the tank and what went into the cans and all that, kegs and all that kind of stuff. It can be monthly.
Okay.
It could even be quarterly. That's probably not enough. Some people are doing weekly, but just, are we doing it regularly? Or is it hey, I'm going to call my guy at the end of the year and he's going to say, people call me and they say, okay, well, what was your inventory this year? The number hasn't moved all year. Well, I don't know. Let me go take a look out on the floor. And that's where, honestly, we can make it work on the tax side.
Sure.
But you're not able to manage your business. And that's really the purpose of those financial statements. It's not for me. It's for you to be able to manage your business.
So let me ask you this then, because some people out there might be saying obviously we're going to do the inventory, right?
Right.
But it seems to me like maybe it's the right kind of inventory too. Like, do I need to count every napkin at the hop grenade kind of right. inventory? Or is it for me, we really just care about what I'm selling, you know, like, so when it totally. Comes to, right. So, yeah. so like a napkins are just a cost of doing business. Yep. I can't yep. sell chicken wings without napkins.
Right.
But well, do you I care mean, you about could. My napkins? yeah. right. yeah. Do you see what I mean? So, because yeah, I, totally. It sounds to yeah. me like there's maybe a smart inventory that you care about.
Yeah, we care. You know, you care most about the stuff, the highest dollar stuff.
Okay.
And the stuff that is driving your revenue the most.
Okay.
We also care most about the items, frankly, that aren't going to fluctuate or that are going to fluctuate more. The perfect example would be buying hops under hop contracts, right? If you got a hop contract or you're bringing in tons of hops because you're pre-buying for the year or sometimes more than a year, right?
Right.
If you expense that all in 1 month, your metrics are thrown out of whack, not only for that whole year, but the next, because next year I'm going to be looking at comparatives.
Okay.
And so some of that kind of stuff is definitely more important. Napkins, if your napkins are you always have two cases in the back? Candidly, I don't really. You probably should still do some sort of inventory, but candidly, I don't really care about that.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, it's that higher dollar stuff, and it's the cyclical stuff okay. That really is going to drive what we're doing. And you'll see it because you know you've maybe looked at financial statements before, or you know people listening have, and they know you know they look at it month over month and like, man, this month I made money, this month I lost money, this month I made money, this month I lost money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we get that inventory correct month over month, and all of a sudden it smooths that out.
I see.
Because this month you bought a bunch of stuff, and then the next month you sold that stuff.
Okay.
Well, there's a principle in accounting it's all about matching, right? We want to have that expense correlate with when we make the sale,
right?
And that's how we know, okay, were we actually profitable here?
But that's difficult to do in a brewery, right? Like because of the length of time yeah. of a product cycle, yeah. right? So we had Tony McGee in here.
Yeah.
Now a billionaire, the founder of Lagunitas. But yeah. at the time, and he wrote a book about this, he yep. was talking about
it.
How difficult it is
yeah.
because you're just, every dollar you make, you're just throwing it into the next thing.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Because the product cycle is what it is, like yep. a 2 month thing yep. between ordering and drinking, he basically was saying, I needed to sell half of Lagunitas because I was tired of being broke on that product
yeah,
cycle.
Totally.
Right? So inventory matters there too. Like I'm going to buy it in January, but I'm not selling it till March.
Yeah, yeah. And that's called the cash conversion cycle is what you're talking about.
Okay.
And we've actually, funnily enough, yeah, I've done a talk about this a couple times actually as well. And really it's a problem of growth more than inventory, right? So as you're growing, you're spending money on the sales you're going to make, you know, three, four Later. Months from now, mm-hmm. but you're using profits from 2 months ago. So now all of a sudden it's 6 months from the time you spend a dollar till you turn it into $1.20.
Yes.
And in the meantime, I got 5 more months worth of stuff to buy. So that kind of ball as it winds up can get, it's a lot. And that's been a struggle, you know, a little bit less today because people aren't growing, you know, craft isn't growing like as crazy
right.
like as I used to. But that's very much a struggle. And that's where you look at it. I am profitable. I went to see my CPA and he says we owe taxes because we have profit, but I don't have any money in the bank.
Right.
And that's part of, you know, you mentioned earlier how, you know, when you started the BN, you didn't even want to look at your bank account.
Yeah.
Well, part of my job is actually to move us out of watching the bank account to, okay, let's actually look at the financials because the bank account is reflecting cash and
right.
cash flow,
yeah.
which may or may not correlate to profit. Eventually, it's all gonna normalize, right? If we
You're
just
right.
shut
yeah.
everything down in 6 months, cash will equal profit. But up until that point, it's not going to. So
sure.
So that's kind of how that works.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so proper inventory, at least yeah. monthly, can
yeah.
really help us get a picture of the business
yeah.
more than the bank account's going to do.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And then the next thing from there that we want to look at, you know, we've got that inventory. So now we've got a sense of cost of goods sold. You know, we want to look at classes. And classes are really, you think of them as revenue verticals or revenue streams. So generally speaking, we're going to be like tap room. If we're a brew pub, we're going to have the restaurant
yeah.
and then we're going to have wholesale.
Okay.
And we kind of want to separate those out, at least at the top line. And sometimes ideally we'd separate more, but
okay.
separate them out at least at the top line. And the reason for that is we want to track each thing on its own because I want to know is the tap room carrying the restaurant?
Mm.
That's likely. Is the restaurant carrying the tap room? Possible. Not doesn't happen that often.
Okay.
Is the tap room carrying our distribution? pretty likely, but maybe not, and ideally not.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And so then we can see that, and then we can see, okay, where do we put our next dollar? And this is where you see, you know, a lot of breweries opening a second and third tap room.
Sure.
That is the most profitable. But then COVID hits. And
until
we
a pandemic hits.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we got to figure out distribution. And there's other value to distribution besides just driving the bottom line, yeah. Right? I mean, hey, you can make money. Of course you can make money at it, but it's a competitive market. It's a different business model.
Sure.
But it gets your name out there. It keeps product moving, which keeps product fresh, mm-hmm. all these other sort of things.
Have you seen with any of your clients where distribution is actually kind of a loss, but they just feel they have to do it anyway?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's just the margins are so tight. And part of it is, you know, there are certain sizes you have to get to justify, say, a salesperson, right?
Yes,
you got to be at a certain, you know, a salesperson probably is going to be about 10% of what they're bringing in is what you're paying them.
Yeah.
And if you're growing it, if you're, you know, you're trying to figure things out, they're also washing kegs because, you know, you're not that big.
Right.
You know, the bigger folks is different because then, oh, we're trying to get into this market and you're always trying to project ahead. So,
absolutely.
I mean, wholesale is a different, you know, to be a production brewery, that's a different beast. And
absolutely,
you know, if you're over the hump now, you're cool. You can probably maintain, hopefully.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're not over that hump now, and not extremely well capitalized, seven figures capitalized,
I would be nervous.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Okay.
For sure.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So separate out our revenue streams like that so that we have, and then just as an example, you said ideally we would separate out even more. What do you mean? Like we would look at draft versus cans is like when you separate more, like what do you?
I meant, that's at least top line. We're separating it out.
Yeah.
Ideally, some of the expenses below that in a perfect world, you know, we've got the top line separated out. We have the cost of goods associated with it. So when the brewery's making beer, we see, well, what of that beer is selling on the tap room? What of that beer is selling through wholesale? And those costs are reflected in those kind of columns, those kind of verticals.
Okay.
So we can see, okay, our margin, you know, our margin through the tap room is 85%. Our margin in wholesale is 35%.
Got it.
Okay. Both of those can work because our volume or whatever, but you want to be able to see that. And if you're not tracking the numbers that way, you can't see that.
Sure.
So then, you know, you're throwing darts at a dartboard. I don't know. We got another account today. Cool.
Right.
Great. Awesome. And
which
that
is the very small business thing to do.
Totally,
right.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it can, like I talk about how running a business off of feeling.
Right.
It can feel like things are going great.
Yeah.
And then you take a good look and it's really
right.
Not.
Like, where's the money? Yeah,
especially
totally.
if one revenue, the revenue stream that's in your face, maybe your tap room, because that's where you walk into work every day, looks really good. It might be hard to see that something else is doing pretty bad.
Yeah. And also, you know, having things separated out like that gives you the opportunity to realize we got to do some price adjustments. In the last couple of years, of course, everybody's had to do significant price adjustments regularly to the point of being uncomfortable with it or deciding we're not going to do one now, even though we probably should. But having that information. And I do want to just pause for a minute and caveat, you know, I think oftentimes, you know, with accountants and even, you know, brewers who get into this kind of stuff, you get to a place where you want to get really into the weeds. And like you said, I want to know profitability of the six pack versus, you know, growlers, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, bombers back in the day, whatever it is. And that's great. And I think there is a time and a place for that. But overall, like, let's keep it. I actually push my clients to have more simplicity in their financials and, you know, and even the I call it the fantasy of like one click reporting. Like I can know exactly,
you know,
there are softwares that sell that. The problem is the struggle is not the problem. The struggle is the amount of time and energy and staff it takes to have enough information data into the system to be able to get that stuff out is difficult. So I always say, hey, everything we look at, even inventory, and I would say I'd make the argument for inventory all day long, but all that kind of stuff, you know, is the information that we're gaining by adding this extra amount of work or an extra amount of detail into our financials going to allow me to make a management decision that's going to affect my bottom line that I don't have another way of figuring out how to make?
Okay.
And so that's kind of always we step back with that because it's very easy to get in the weeds. And then you're like, okay, well, hang on. But I got these cans and we've got some labels on the shelf that I don't think we're going to use anymore. Do we expense? And, you know, then you end up, and that is all that's valid. But let's stay high level and let's just, you know, we make a lot of assumptions because we have to because this stuff is all moving targets, right?
Yeah. So that makes sense to me. And that's part of why I've been able to relate to you over the years, because you do simplify things for me like that. And I'm the type of person who it's not that I want to care about all those details, but I can get caught in them because I feel like I'm supposed to.
Sure.
And especially like I think it's amplified when things aren't going well.
Yeah.
You know, if your tap room's kind of stagnant, if your brewery's just like right there, if you're struggling to make some of those payrolls, it's very easy to go, well, I guess we better cut Comcast. No more football in the tap room because that's, but all of those things are not really what matters.
Yeah. And it's easy to get caught up, you know, kind of those red herrings of I'm going to chase this down. And it's good. I don't want to discount that. And we've seen a lot of that in the last year because, you know, unfortunately, it's been a harder year, right, for a lot of breweries and restaurants and other industries too. But, things have just settled after COVID, right? And so it's easy to focus on those little expenses. And I don't want to discount that. That is important because that bloat can also kill you. But, you know, really, driving that top line is going to be such a key to all this.
If you've got limited time, resources, and energy, let's focus on the top
line.
Let's
go make a dollar instead of saving 10 cents is my,
Got it.
It's easy for me to sit there and say, well, if this line were better, then we'd be good. I understand.
But that's Marty. That's Marty's voice in my head.
Right.
If we're bringing in money, everything else gets fixed.
Yep.
So,
totally.
Okay. All right. So understanding our COGS, our inventory.
COGS, classes, those sorts of things. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
You had mentioned something to me when we were kind of planning this topic that I need you to elaborate on, and that's labor.
Yeah.
But you said labor by revenue stream, right?
Right.
So now most of us, I'm going to go ahead and say all businesses have no choice but to focus pretty heavily on labor because it's our biggest expense.
Yep.
Especially if you're in California.
Right.
If you're not in California right now, listener who owns a brewery that's not in California, good for you. God bless you. I envy you. Right.
Godspeed.
Labor by revenue stream is something you want us to focus on.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
Yeah. Similar to what we were talking about with those classes, right? Ooh. We want to see our labor, but it's very common that we're just focused on, hey, man, our biweekly payroll is $25,000 every 2 weeks, or it's $100,000 every 2 weeks, or it's $2,000, whatever your number is, we focus on that. Well, there's components to that, right? And so we really want to know the components, how much of that is going into producing the beer, mm-hmm. how much of that is going to pouring, serving the beer, how much of that is going into, delivery, those sorts of things if you're self-distributed, how much of that is back office, right? People doing the accounting, those sort of things.
Yeah.
And knowing those answers, again, lets us know what our gross margin is and are we making money selling this additional beer? If I've got three extra people in the back running AR mostly AR because I'm trying to collect because we got 1,000 accounts out there.
Yeah.
But we realize all this wholesale, all this distribution is kind of breaking even on us because once we're carrying all those,
again,
we don't know that until we have that level of detail. So at a minimum, I want to see labor, we can take wholesale out of it, at a minimum, we want to see a labor breakdown between the back of the house,
mm-hmm.
if there's a kitchen, the food side,
yep.
and then front of the house.
Okay.
And the reason for that is just to see, are we making money making this beer or not? And I always tell, our clients, there's different philosophies on this. And I suppose in a perfect accounting world, we'd have actual costs from the brewery running to the tap room and we'd see, the brewery cost, $1.35 a pint and we sold this at the brew pub. But honestly, what I tell my clients is generally speaking, we have the brewery sell, it's on paper, but sell to the tap room at wholesale.
Yeah.
And so that way we know, is the brewery standing on its own 2 feet and is the tap room standing on its own 2 feet? The answer to that question can be no. We got to have this tap room here or the brewery isn't surviving, but at least we know. And then we can decide. Same with a restaurant. We're losing money on the restaurant, but it's probably bringing in 30% more people and they're ordering two more beers and the brewery's killing it. We don't care.
Right.
So, but now you know.
But now you know. And that makes sense. And it sounds like, especially if you're small, it sounds like you almost want to fight back about that. Like, Lou, I'm not going to sell myself beer. That's stupid. It's in the back room. I'm going to move it to the front room.
Yeah.
But you're saying you're really missing a component there if you don't.
We're just tracking the cost. We're not selling beer. Obviously, there'd be filing. There's TTB rules and sales tax. We're not doing any of that. But
it's like a ledger.
We're keeping track of it and we're transferring it over. So it's really, if you think of the P&L, mm-hmm. instead of there just being one column, there's two columns, right?
Yeah.
And then they total up to the same. And so we're moving it from column A to column B in that cost of goods category to correlate with column B's revenue that is being driven by people coming in.
Okay.
And so again, it's all about matching. It's about matching the expense with the sale and the time it happens, and then also the kind of the revenue stream it happens.
Okay.
On the accounting side.
Got it. Now, we didn't talk about this ahead of time. There's just questions that come up for me over the years. There's different types of accounting, right? Like accrual versus cash.
Yep.
Now, this is somewhere that Marty and my management team never could get on the same page about.
Yeah.
Marty's idea, I think, was a little bit more like yours, to be honest, where he's like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But my manager felt that cash was not a good way for him to decide how sales were, if we need to do more promotions, because he wasn't getting a good picture on the spot.
Right.
And that's part of the cycle that we talked about, right? Yep. Where you're spending 2 months ago to collect today.
Totally. Yep.
So Marty always had an issue with anything but cash because it didn't reflect the business anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
My manager hated that because he's like, well, then how can I do any projections in the tap room?
Right.
So can we talk about that a little?
Yeah, okay. Totally. So, it comes back to this principle in accounting of matching, right? Which we're trying to match, income and expenses.
Yeah.
To be honest, most of what we've been talking about now is actually something called like a modified accrual basis accounting, which essentially is cash basis, but we add inventory to it.
Okay.
And so, for me, the inventory drives the cost of goods. Those are the biggest drivers, right?
Sure.
So in accrual basis accounting, essentially you're recognizing revenue when it's earned and you're recognizing expenses when they're incurred.
Okay.
And so the easy example is rent. We're incurring December's rent now. We might not pay that until January. On accrual basis accounting, we actually book it into December.
Got it.
Cash basis, we book it when the cash when the check clears, right? Or at least when we cut the check. And so here with accrual basis, we're pulling it back and then we're associating the rent that we paid this period with the revenue that came in this period.
Yes.
You know, when you have a tap room, the revenue side, accrual basis doesn't really mean anything because it's just in the door or it's not. But when you're in wholesale or distribution or something like that, or even maybe you do some catering, on the restaurant side or whatever it is, you do some contract brewing. The revenue is earned when you send out the invoice.
Okay.
They owe you the money now, right?
Yeah.
And so that's when we pick it up as revenue. They may not pay you for 60 days.
Yeah.
They may not pay you ever, right?
But on the books, you got paid.
On the books, it's revenue when it happens.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is I sold it. And then I picked up the cost of goods sold. That's why it's called cost of goods sold. It's not called cost of goods produced.
Right.
It's cost of goods sold. What did I sell? How much did it cost me to sell what I sold? And then what's left over to cover all the other expenses? And all the other expenses could also be accrued on true accrual. We do all sorts of accruals. You know, you'll pick up what's the liability for employees, PTO. Do I have a prepaid for insurance? Because, you know, you pay 6 months at a time. We don't monkey with that with most of our folks.
Okay.
Some folks do. And when you get to a point where you're needing reviewed financials or audited financials, there can be times when you have to do that. You'll hear the term GAAP accounting.
Yeah.
GAAP is what it is, generally accepted accounting principles. And most people are not doing GAAP. Full GAAP is actually very cumbersome.
Okay.
You know, real large companies are doing it, right?
Okay.
So for most of our folks, we are going to be on this kind of modified accrual basis, which is going to be really cash basis, but we're going to recognize revenue, you know, when invoiced, and we're going to recognize cost of goods, you know, on
when we pay.
Keeping an eye on that inventory, because again, that inventory is very important.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. And I think Marty would agree with you, by the way.
All right. Let's call him.
Anything else on the best practices accounting before we take a break?
Those are the biggies, man.
I think
we're talking about hot button items, there's always a lot of questions that come up, but those are the big things. You know, I'll just finish it with this. Like I said, you know, I like to keep things simple with folks.
Yes.
You know, we do some KPI reporting for some of our folks, and you can get really far into the weeds on that stuff and see margins for 45,000 things. Honestly, I think, you know, most of us can keep in our head three things. So it's like, hey, let's target three things. You know, let's target our gross margin. You know, if we're talking about the restaurant, food costs and labor costs. Moving on. You know what I mean? These kinds of things. Because the rest of it is important, and I don't want to discount it. But we got to focus on the low-hanging fruit. And so let's pick a couple
things. And as you get better, you can move on to the
others.
Totally,
yeah. Once you kind of get dialed here, you get your team trained, your team dialed in.
Yeah.
Then you move on to other things. But, you know, we try to keep it fairly simple.
Okay. All right. We are speaking with Lou Catalano from Munn CPAs. You can go to MUNCPAS.com to learn more. MUNCPAS.com. And you're listening to The Session. We'll be right back.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome plated brass towers, and Comos keeps your new tower cold with their air cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Comos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Comos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from ComosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's ComosDraft.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Their website features real-time inventory, which means if you can put it in your cart, they can guarantee it'll ship the same day by 4 p.m. on weekdays. Want easy and simple electric brewing? Check out the new Series 2 Mash and Boil, featuring an elevated grain basket so you don't have to calculate sparge water. Williams also features the full Kegland line, everything from Brewzilla to Maltzilla, and a huge selection of duo-tight fittings. Looking for a kegerator? Look no further than the Kegland Series X and Plus kegerators, which feature 4 and 8 keg capacity in a compact footprint, and free shipping to the lower 48. Interested in distilling? Look up their proven Williams American Bourbon and Brandy kits, as well as complete distilling equipment packages and conversion kits for popular systems like the Mash and Boil, Anvil, and the Grainfather. Check them out today. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We're still speaking with Lou Catalano from Munn CPAs, MUNCPAS.com. You can go check it out. Contact him if you're a brewery in the area or probably even out of the area. He'd give you some advice if you want to reach out. All right. So we were talking about accounting practices, and we're going to move into taxes.
Yes.
But speaking about inventory reminded me of something that came up again recently. I did learn this years ago. It frustrated me then, and it frustrates me now. But my GM was asking me about it, and I couldn't quite give him the answer other than I knew I was right. And that is this. We just bought a bunch of inventory, in this case, in the form of T-shirts and hats, because we wanted people to be able to do Christmas shopping.
Yep.
And that's something that I failed at in past years here at the Grenade, where we just didn't really plan for that. The problem with it is, let's just throw out a number. I buy, let's call it $5,000 worth of merchandise.
Yep.
Well, if I only sell $500 of that, I have a tax burden of $4,500 worth of inventory, right? And this is what I need you to help explain, especially if I'm saying it wrong. Because my GM was saying, like, well, it's a why is that an asset? It's like a liability. We had to pay for it. Yeah. And I was like, well, it's a catch-22 here. We need the inventory because I need stuff to sell. But because we're going to have a bunch left over on December 31st, we're going to somehow pay taxes on it as well.
Right.
Can you help me with this problem? Not fixing it, but understanding it is what I mean.
So are you telling me I need to buy $4,500 worth of shirts? Is that what I'm hearing?
A lot of shirts, yeah.
Well, I'll just say as a quick side note, that was really wise to buy the inventory. And that's something I've been talking to a lot of our clients about. You know, man, merchandise, I think for a lot of folks, is a surprisingly high percentage of sales. And I don't mean 20%, but it's more, you expect it's kind of going to be nominal. And we see for a lot of our folks, especially if they're doing a good job of refreshing, you know, making something exciting and interesting when people are coming in the door, certainly around this time of year, people are gift shopping and that kind of stuff, it's more meaningful. So having enough on the shelf and, you know, having stuff that people are excited about and interested in is a meaningful revenue driver.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And it's, but you can tie up cash. So, you know, ultimately, there could potentially be some, like, there's something called a 571L. There's some property tax stuff that they could come into play. But okay. Ultimately, I think what you're getting at is, look, man, we bought $5,000 worth of inventory. We sold $500. We got $4,500 on the books.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, you spent that money, right? So that cash is gone.
Right.
But it's not an expense for tax purposes. And so it's almost like you used pre-tax, after-tax money to buy it.
Okay.
Now, next year, when you sell all that inventory, the cash, the cash already left. And so then we get the expense.
Yeah.
And so as you write that inventory down, you get the expense. So for tax purposes, that helps you out.
Got it.
There's generally a little bit of wiggle room with that, particularly with merch. Well, really with anything, we have shrinkage and other things.
Sure.
So at the end of the year, you look to tie that out and sometimes, you're able to pull it down, which helps you for tax purposes or up. But yeah, it comes back to that idea of cash flow versus profit, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. It just was. I couldn't explain it just the right way, even though I have an understanding of it.
Right.
Right.
Yep,
so
totally.
Okay. So why don't we talk about some other tax stuff now? Hopefully, most brewery owners have
the
a tax.
Two that are still awake.
Yeah, have a tax person. I highly recommend this, even if you think you're good at it. I think having someone else look at things, and that's some of the stuff that you've brought up for me over the years, but also for today's show.
Yeah.
Some stuff that we might not think about, might not understand that really a tax professional does. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's talk about some of those things. A lifesaver for me, and this is probably low-hanging fruit for our listeners, but the ERC credit.
Yeah.
What does that stand for again?
Employee Retention Credit.
Employee Retention Credit, which I retained my employees, which I was pretty proud of and pretty stoked.
Yeah.
And then you handled it for me, so I don't know much more about it other than that I got a credit.
Okay,
and
cool.
It was a lifesaver in 20... I think it was 22 that you got it for me, maybe... Yeah.
Yeah, probably 21, 22.
Maybe it's spread out a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's all I really know about it.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Well, so that's part of the COVID relief. I won't belabor it too much because I think most people have probably dealt with it.
Yeah.
But, when you and I started talking the most was right actually before, I think, the PPP loans came out, which was the very first, if you remember, I'm sure you do, but you remember we got those $1,000 EIDL grants.
Yeah.
And then the loans became available and then the PPP. And actually my first ever webinar was on PPP and you and I connected over some of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And so there were two rounds of those. And at the time, they also introduced this ERC, the Employee Retention Credit.
Okay.
And at the time, it was kind of an either or. You take the PPP or you take the ERC.
Ah.
PPP was a forgivable loan, generally better. We told most people to take that.
Yeah.
Well, in December of 2020, they updated the laws and they said, well, we're actually going to let you take both.
Nice.
So you can go back and take a look at that. And we're going to extend the program into 2021. And we're going to make the qualification criteria more generous, easier to qualify for ERC, and we're going to make the credit a lot bigger for 21. So that turned out great. So for pretty much all of our breweries in California, we're able to qualify at least through 615. There were two real qualification criteria. One is a reduction in revenue, and that was the original. Actually, both were there. And then the second was this, if you were subjected to a full or partial closure due to a government order due to COVID.
Yeah.
So bars and restaurants, breweries, super easy. We were, out to go only, outdoor only, 50% capacity, all that stuff qualifies. So that's how we're able to qualify. There are other things out there. I do want to caveat, there's a lot of kind of charlatans out there hawking ERC to anybody.
This is my next question for you. I was going to let you finish and then I have a question about it.
Yeah. So we'll let you ask. So that's what the ERC was. And so, it was a really great credit. If you're a brewery who hasn't taken it, I will say you, with almost no exceptions, qualify for something. Likely if you had payroll during that time period and you haven't taken it, reach out to somebody to check in on it. A lot of folks have. We do have to pick it up as income. You do need to pick it up. It's actually a reduction in expense, but definitely something worth looking at.
It for us, aside from the PPP, what ended up being a grant instead.
Right.
It was like the second largest check we received.
Right. Yeah. No, they became very large for a lot of folks. It was kind of almost surprisingly large. And particularly with anybody, so any of our tap rooms or restaurants or things like that that have tipped employees, you actually could calculate the ERC credit based off of the tips that were reported.
So the full wage. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're getting a credit for cash that your customers gave your employees. You're getting a credit for it. And it's going, obviously we know it's going back to the,
it went right
the,
back into back the business.
Back into the business, not like people,
which was their point anyway. That's why they did it.
That's what's called the employee retention credit. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm one of the. I do say this from time to time, but between the PPP and the ERC credit, I always joke like, you're not going to find me complaining about the government. Talk to me again in 2 years right. when they've pissed me
and
off
forget
again.
Forget about it. Yeah.
But
yeah.
until then, yeah. I really felt the and certainly in my case, the programs they created not only worked, they yeah. got to me in a timely manner, yeah. and they were spent exactly how they intended them to be because
sure.
I wanted to stay open.
Sure.
I wanted to survive.
Sure.
right. So yeah. Anyway, yeah. I know this is not quite the tax conversation, but I was a very thankful person
yeah.
and not a person that you I wasn't really complaining about how the government yeah. screwed this up.
Yeah. I would say, you know, obviously there were plenty of mistakes that were made, but when you look back to like the crash in 08 and things like that, I think they did a good job of getting money into the right hands
yeah.
As quickly as possible.
Sure.
And of course, when you're moving that quickly, you know, things are going to go great.
Of course.
There's obviously a lot of fraud that happened, and that's the reality of
it.
And
they knew, they're, by the way, smart enough to know that was going to happen.
Sure.
They probably
sure.
factored that into the math before they ever did it, right? Like
yeah.
smarter people than me, you know. but yeah, I just, I do think yeah. on the whole, could we have done some other things different?
Of course, in retrospect, I think, and even maybe not, maybe in the moment, you could have figured out some,
yeah.
certainly there are ways it could have been less complicated from where
yes.
I sit, of
yes.
course. You know, the burden on those of us who are having to report it is pretty onerous. But
yeah.
But by and large, I have to agree.
Yeah. Well, yeah. there were times where you were like, you can do this, Justin. If you go look, and I would go look, and I'd be like, no, you know, fuck this, Lou. You're doing it. I'm not going to figure this one out.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I tell you, my partners and I all have a little bit of PTSD from that time period. Just I know all the business owners do, but we were just on the phone. You know, we're all at home, and immediately, you know, you shut down. Of course, everybody's home, and we're on the phone 12 hours a day, just talking clients, having the same conversation.
Yeah.
You know, 40 times a day, and helping and trying, and also learning on the fly. I mean, there were times I was giving webinars like on PPP,
yeah.
and the rules were changing as I'm giving the webinar. I had one
right.
of my partners texting. Me like no that changed. I'm well they're not gonna do about it now, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, it was a weird time for all of us. Of course, I'm happy to be through it, but you know, there's still some stuff out there that people need to pay attention to. There's also, again, you know, there's some bad actors out there that are giving bad advice.
Yes.
And the IRS is attempting to crack down on it, although it appears most of what they're cracking down on, unfortunately, is actually international fraud, which is literally just
interesting.
Other governments come in and saying, well, hey, this is a,
wow.
we'll go ahead and fill out some forms. No problem. It appears to be what a lot of it is. So.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, last question then on the ERC though,
yeah.
that you brought up too is, so I still get multiple mailers a week
yeah.
and at least 2 or 3 phone calls, messages left
oh, yeah.
on my phone
yep.
of people offering me the ERC.
Yep.
They've, I'll just like in quotation marks, we've reviewed your account.
Yeah. We've reviewed your file.
And I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah.
what?
Yep. Yep.
Charlatans or
I mean, definitely, yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Okay.
I've gotten some of the wording on some of them is really funny. You know, some
yes.
there was one.
By the way,
like,
I'm apparently owed something like $2 million
yeah,
in the
oh,
ERC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you just say yes to all of them and just see how
yeah.
it goes. I don't know. I just they all said I qualified. Yeah.
yeah.
So no, it, you know, I think we knew we jumped the shark when you started seeing advertisements during the Super Bowl for it, right? I mean, this
yeah.
has been a major gold rush in some ways,
okay.
which is unfortunate because you know it helped keep a lot of businesses afloat and it helped keep. It did help people, and still does
yeah.
help keep people employed. So it's important stuff. If you know, I would encourage folks who, you know, legitimately qualify, don't be scared away by some of the stuff you're hearing.
Okay.
There's also, hey, man, if you think you got taken by one of these, there are actually programs that IRS has put in place where you can kind of come in and you can retract your application and you can
oh, okay.
do some things if you feel like, you know what, I probably got swindled here. I want to come about. Again,
really
most
any-
of our breweries, you definitely qualify. I can't be that absolute, but there's a very high likelihood, you know, you qualify through 615 of 21 at a minimum.
And really, any qualified, licensed CPA is going to know about this and be able to help you do it.
Well,
I don't have to
yeah.
listen to the mailer that says I'm going to get
no,
$2 million.
No, you shouldn't. Don't respond to the mailers.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So they don't all do it, but plenty of them do, and everybody at least knows about it.
Yeah.
You know, there are folks who, especially early on, there were some folks in our industry who were saying, you know, telling their clients, no, you don't qualify because they didn't want to do the legwork to figure it out or whatever, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, you know, it does. So, you know, there's a balance to be struck for sure.
Okay.
But there's definitely a lot out there. Don't respond to the text messages.
Okay. All right. What are some other tax advantages or things we should know about?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we sit down and talk with folks, you know, some of the first stuff we talk about is you know, entity structure and making sure we have the right entity type set up. And that's a lot of what we do. You know, we talk through that kind of stuff. Like I said, you know, the accounting side of it that we just talked about, that's probably, you know, 40% of our job. And the other 60% is really that strategic tax planning and advising.
Okay.
Hopefully that's because we get to a place where we're profitable, and many breweries have been profitable for a very long time and still are, you know, even today. Things are a little tighter today, but you know, still are today.
Yeah.
So you know, making sure we have the right entity set up. There's a lot of different considerations there.
Sure.
You know, oftentimes we have an investor pool, and so we've got those folks to be aware of and make sure we're taking care of. Oftentimes we also see, you know, we own the land as well as the building.
Okay.
And so there's structures to be had there. There's rents to be charged and some planning around that sort of stuff.
Got it.
And also just rules to make sure you're following. You know, you can't just do whatever you want, right? So we want to make sure, you know, half of my job is the peace of mind, you know, giving people the peace of mind that we know this stuff is being done right.
Sure.
And the other half is, you know, let's save you some money so that, you know, you can invest in your kids' college and
right.
and your retirement, those kind of things.
So that's been a good, like, I think I'm a good example of this because I have two companies that essentially exist in the same building. I've got the Brewing Network, which, as you and I know, is a sole proprietor.
Sure.
And then we've got the Hop Grenade, where I have all the partners. And that's an LLC in my case.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, off the record, I won't give all of my personal details.
Yeah, what else do you want me to share?
But you and I are discussing that right now.
Right.
Off air about what we might do there. But that's a good example about how, like, you know, maybe the Brewing Network has rent to pay to the Hop Grenade because the Hop Grenade's on the lease, but the Brewing Network rents this studio space.
Right.
And so that's the entity stuff that you're really talking about and making sure that each one is the right way to do it.
Yep.
But you're talking about it not from a liability standpoint. You're talking about it from a tax liability standpoint.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. Every entity has a slightly different tax implications.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of them are similar, right? A partnership and an S corporation are going to be fairly similar. An LLC, actually, for federal tax purposes, doesn't exist. So it's going to be one of another type of entity. It's going to be a sole proprietorship or a partnership or an S corporation or whatever it is. We also have some C corporations, particularly people took advantage of a program where you were able to take money out of your retirement account, like your 401k,
you can
use that money to as seed money for your own business.
Okay.
Really cool.
Yeah.
The problem is you have to set it up as a C corporation. Generally speaking, C corporations are going to be the most heavily taxed.
Okay.
And so we have to figure out how do we navigate that, and how do we in most cases we try to figure out you start it that way, and then after a couple of years we're figuring out, okay, how do we unwind that? We had the capital influx that we needed. Now we got the business. Can we unwind this piece of it? Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that's some higher level strategy that generally is takes a couple of years to get through.
Yeah.
So it's a lot about sitting down and talking about what's our end goal here.
Yeah.
And then how do we do this in a way that's not going to cost you a whole bunch in tax? Because these are where, in some ways, it seems esoteric, but in other ways, it's actually these are where they're real high consequence, right? If you screw up in one of these areas, all of a sudden, you know, you're getting taxed on income you never saw, or you know, we've got a negative capital account and we switched, and now, you know, these sort of you made a distribution out of a C corp. Now we've got dual taxation, those sort of things.
Got it. Well, so what I have experienced over the years is one thing I was smart enough to do, even though I haven't always had a dedicated CPA, is I would always ask about these things that I don't know. Because I definitely was taught, you don't fuck with the IRS. It's the only people you can't fuck with.
Right.
Right. So I'll get to my point here. And that is, for years and years and years, other small businesses about my size, which is, I'm a small business, they would say, I don't know why you're a sole proprietorship. You just become an S corp or this other corp, and then you won't pay any taxes. And I was like, that sounds strange.
Yeah.
So I've asked more than one CPA about this.
Yeah.
And I've often gotten the answer at whatever level I was at the time.
Right.
That's bullshit. You're going to pay tax no matter what.
Right.
As a sole proprietor, do you pay some Social Security tax, some self-employment tax? Yes, you do.
Yeah.
But you're still going to incur other taxes as this other corporation.
Yep.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, there's this myth out there that corporations are perfect entities that are left alone.
Right.
But that's not really true at different levels of income, right?
No, totally true. You know, okay. Some of it comes down to how much complexity do we want to add? You know, are there times when maybe I could make something work? Like on paper, yeah, you're saving money doing A, B, and C.
Yeah.
But man, you're adding all these layers of complexity and reporting and these sorts of things. Is that what you want for your life? Where are you headed?
Right.
Are we octupling our income in the next couple of years? Well, then maybe it's a different story.
Okay.
But if this is just what I'm doing, let's stay the course here. So I'm less eager to just tell people to jump into things that are more complicated, even if on paper, maybe you can save some tax.
Okay.
And sometimes you can't, right? I agree with you. There is a myth out there. Oh, no, it's all in the it's a business write-off.
So there's nothing.
You know, I will say with almost no exceptions, there are very few things you can write off, say, in an S corporation that you can't write off as a sole proprietor or in a C corporation.
That's the advice I was given.
A business write-off is a business write-off.
Yeah.
There are some kind of weird exceptions, right? But those are the fringes of the rules.
Sure.
There are other reasons to do it, and there are definitely good reasons to do it. And oftentimes we do have folks in an entity. And then there's also, I won't get into legal because that's not what my license is for, but there's also the legal protection side of it.
Yes.
That is a consideration. We bring in a lawyer and you talk about, you know, what does that look like?
And so that's good to know too.
Yeah.
Just, I'm glad that you're making that distinction for folks. Because by the way, the sole proprietor thing, that's very few of our listeners. Maybe if you're going to open a homebrew shop or something,
right,
you might fall into that bucket. For you brewery owners, you're going to end up in one of these corporation types.
Right.
But yeah, it's great to know that you're considering tax implications and legal protection.
Right.
Right. And so that stuff's separate but important.
Separate but important. And then just lifestyle. Like how many, for some folks, it's just too tough of a putt to wrap your head around all this. Like, I don't know, I got the money. I'm the business. The business is me. What do we do here? You know?
Yeah.
So, and particularly, you know, probably one of the most difficult things for folks to understand when they have what's called a pass-through entity. So that's going to be a partnership or S corporation, which 90% of the breweries that we work with are going to be one of those two.
Okay.
Is that you're taxed on the profit of the business, not on the cash that you take out of the business.
Okay.
And that's a really tough concept. You could take out $1 million and be taxed at zero, or vice versa. You could take nothing out and still be taxed for $1 million of profit. And so,
I learned that sort of early on too,
okay,
where I used to pat myself on the back, like, I don't take any money out of the business.
Right.
I leave it in there, right?
Yeah,
and then I thought, yeah, well, that's good. Now you got a healthy bank account, and you're not going to pay taxes because you didn't take it.
Yeah, I didn't take it. It's not my problem.
Like, first CPA is like, you probably should have taken it because you're going to pay for it now.
Yeah, you're paying either way, man.
So,
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where, you know, your relationship with your CPA really ought to be one where you're sitting down at least once during the year, maybe multiple times, but during the tax year, right? So I've just brought in all my clients. We've done year-end tax planning. Some of them we do mid-year. Mm-hmm. Some of them we meet more regularly than that. And that's the idea. Let's sit down. Let's talk about entity structure, but then we talk about the other stuff too.
Yeah.
So at a minimum, you know, our folks are knowing in October, November, here's what I think you're going to owe in April. But ideally, hey, here are the moves we're going to make during the year. The stuff we're going to do, we're going to bonus out your employees, or we're going to, you know, fund a pension, or, you know, you need to buy another tank or whatever it is.
Right.
We make sure we've got the things in place to take these credits during the year. Right. And so that's where, you know, a lot of the value add comes in.
So that's a case where after sitting down with you or their CPA, they might decide to spend the cash on a tank in December or January?
Sure. Yeah, totally.
If you made a bunch of money in 2023, you might buy it in December 2023, right?
Totally, yeah.
But if you didn't, and you're projected to make money next year,
right,
buy it in January.
Hey, is next year looking better? Yeah,
let's
sit tight there. Or, hey, man, we had a loss this year. What else? Well, maybe there's something else we could do. You know, on the personal side, you're a pass-through entity. We've got a loss coming through. Maybe we convert some of your funds into a Roth. These sort of things. And we won't get into the details of that. But, you know, there's just stuff you want to be paying attention to and thinking about. And it needs to be done, you know, during the year.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What's next?
Well, I had a couple of just, you know, kind of, again, some low-hanging fruit. You know, when we bring in a new client, typically the first thing we do is ask for their tax returns. And so it's like, what are some of the things that we see are missing?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there's a couple of things about, you know, who you're working with. First of all, is it a personality fit?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, do you and some of that is, do you trust them? Do you think they're competent? Do they have your best interest in mind? Can they explain things in a way that you understand rather than, you know, talking over your head or just telling you, oh, don't worry about it, it's fine, we got it handled, you know, that kind of stuff. And for some people, that's what they want.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay, cool. I'm good. So,
right.
But you know, other people want to know more. So there's got to be that personality fit. And you know, are you meeting and doing the planning? But then, you know, beyond that, assuming the basics are correct, right? We don't, and you'd be surprised how many times we see just egregiously this is just wrong. If you get audited, this is going to be a problem.
Right.
You know, or this is just wrong and it costs you a lot of money. Let's fix it. You know, those sort of things. There's some other things we see, you know, particularly as it pertains to breweries. So we talked about the ERC credit.
Yeah.
That was excellent. We've talked about entity selection and how that can matter. You know, something we do for many of our breweries is the research and development credit.
Okay, so, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so we take a look at that, and really that's a credit. What I like about some of these credits is, you know, rather than going out and say spending money, buying a new tank or bonusing your employees, which is are good things to do, I always like to tell people though, you know, don't let the tax tail wag the investment dog. Best case scenario, we're saving 50 cents on the dollar here. If you're in a really high tax bracket, so more likely it's, you know, you're gonna spend a dollar to save 30 cents in tax.
Okay.
Now, if you need it and you're investing in your business and you're taking care of your employees, these are all great things.
Yeah.
But some of these other credits, it's like, hey, this is a credit for money you're already spending, things you're already doing.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and take that, and then you're able to take advantage of it, right? So the research and development credit, you know, it's complex and it's getting more complex,
okay.
But at its core, it's essentially, are you spending money? Are you taking the economic risk to develop something to bring to the marketplace that doesn't already exist?
So it has to be something new.
New to you.
New. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're trying to figure out how to, you know, reverse engineer something, that technically could count. I don't think we're doing a lot of that, right?
But yeah.
You know, so we have some barrel programs. In my opinion, I'll throw it out there that I don't think recipe formulation on its own is enough. So just coming out with a new beer,
okay.
You know, another hazy, that's not going to be good, but we've got cellar programs. Maybe we have, we're working on how do we increase our extract efficiencies. We're experimenting with different hop varietals, these sort of things.
Okay.
You know, there's some credits that go into that. The laws got more complicated this last year. And so there's something now called the Section 174 adjustment where we actually have to take those expenses and amortize them over 5 years.
Okay.
So you don't get to deduct them all in the current year. You get the credit in the current year, but then the expenses are over a couple of years.
I see.
So that's a little bit punitive. You know, we're hopeful that there's some bills to kind of make that go away, but that's been a little bit punitive. So just something, you know, it just is going to require some planning. And frankly, whether you take the R&D credit or not, if you have R&D, you're supposed to do the 5-year deal. So,
okay. Let's hone in on experimental hops.
Okay.
As it pertains to R&D credit. Let's
sure.
use that as an example.
Okay.
Because almost every brewer I talk to at some point during the year, and more so nowadays, are either dealing with a new hop variety or increasingly now new hop formats too.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Extracts
cryo
and things like
and
that.
Extracts, yeah, all that.
So I don't know. An example, I'm gonna use this new hop extract. I'm trying it. Is my entire batch of beer that I brew with that and all of its ingredients fall under this R&D tax credit, for example, or maybe just that product that I bought?
Good question.
Okay,
it's gonna depend. So I'm gonna equivocate here.
Cool.
And not
well,
give you
and
the
maybe
best answer,
change
but,
the question
yeah,
to a real
answer,
world example.
No,
too,
no, that's I mean. That's great. Yeah, the answer is, you know, in that case, it's gonna depend. And we're gonna have to dig into it a little bit.
Yeah.
Where I look at the R&D credit, you know, and we talk about it with our folks is really. Are you applying the scientific method? That's a good start. So hypothesis, test, result, right? And am I incurring the economic risk of doing that, right?
Okay.
If we're developing a batch and then that batch goes into our full production facility and it's out the door, and there may be a component there that's going to be R&D, but then, you know, there's going to be some of it, hey, it's out the door and it worked out, and so that's great. But if we're experimenting with, you know, hey, we always want to hit, you know, 34.8 IBU in this beer after, you know, the 60, well, nobody's does a 60 minute anymore, but, you know,
whatever
it is,
right?
And we're trying that and we're doing some experimentation, you know, the material cost is one thing, and so the new hops and things is something, and, you know, if you were breeding hops or something like that, then that may be more significant. What's going to be more significant is the time of the people that you're paying to do it.
Okay.
And so that's really what it comes down to. So when we look at it, we're really breaking down, okay, we got a head brewer, we have a head cellar person, we have all the, you know, this kind of stuff. We have the owner, they're involved. What amount of their time is spent in this kind of world? And then we take that. Typically, that's going to be our highest. Also, are you paying an independent lab? Do you have an in-house lab? Do you have, you know, you have a lab person? We're trying to improve processes, you know, that kind of stuff. Some of that there. So really, we fall back to, you know, scientific method, that sort of thing.
Okay, that makes sense. And is there a cap on this credit?
Not meaningfully for us. Yeah.
Got
yeah.
It.
And the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, for if you're a new brewery, so within the first, a new business, any business within the first 5 years, you can actually, there are ways we can take the credit and use it against our payroll taxes.
Okay.
So it could be, you know, we're in that growth phase. We're in that startup phase. We're not making any money. That's nice. We're generating this credit. What are we going to do with it? Right. Well, actually we can offset our payroll taxes, and that's real cash flow today.
Right.
You know, so that's a meaningful thing for some of our clients.
Okay. Sounds like an important one for breweries.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, it's not huge for a lot of breweries. Some breweries it's large, and others it's not as big.
Okay.
It just depends, you know. We've got a production brewery, you've got some flagship beers. There's probably not going to be a lot there, but there can still be some.
Okay.
But the bottom line is we got to be looking at it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially if you're investing in it, right? So
Yeah, totally.
Okay. All right. What about Assembly Bill, what is it, 150?
Yeah,
you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so that's state of California specific. So,
okay.
So if you're not in California, actually keep paying attention, because there's a very good chance it applies in your state as well.
Okay.
So functionally what this is, if you have a pass-through entity, so we talked about those, S-corporation, partnership, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
In 2017, as part of kind of the Trump tax bill back in the day, if you look on your personal tax return, your Schedule A itemized deductions, the so-called SALT taxes, state and local income taxes.
Okay.
So that's basically California income tax, property taxes, potentially sales tax. They cap that write-off at $10,000.
Okay.
So for people making real money or own a house in California, you're hitting the cap pretty quickly, right?
Sure.
And so you just lost the whole rest of that deduction. Well, AB 150, what's called the pass-through entity elective tax credit, mm-hmm. came through a couple years ago now.
Okay.
And what it is it's a workaround for this. And so essentially we're able to leverage the fact that we've got this business. Mm-hmm. We can make an election to pay the state income tax at the entity level, which normally we wouldn't pay. There's a small tax if you're an S-corp, but normally you don't pay anything in a pass-through entity.
Okay.
We make an election to pay the tax in that. We get an unlimited deduction. So, you know, we make $1 million in profit in our brewery.
Yeah.
We're going to make a $93,000 pass-through entity elective tax payment, but we're going to get a $93,000 federal deduction.
Okay.
In addition, that credit is going to pass through to each of the individuals who participate based on their ownership percentage.
Okay.
To offset their California state income tax.
Got it.
The IRS has given this the seal of approval, because it's kind of like it's a totally workaround. You're just thumbing the nose.
It also just sounds logical that then you're just not being double taxed, though. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah. Because normally you wouldn't pay any tax at that level. So you're elected.
Okay. That's...
In California, it's a fixed 9.3% of whatever the profit in the company is.
Yeah. Okay.
California profit. And so it's just, hey, California, we're going to pay you this through the entity. And then they're coming back and saying, we're going to give you a credit equal to that amount.
Now
we've worked around this $10,000 cap. Or if you take the standard deduction, even the $10,000 cap is irrelevant, right?
So right.
It's a cool deal. It's in place as long as the SALT cap is in place.
Okay.
Right now, that is actually set to expire in 2025, 2026.
I see.
But... you know, who knows what the next laws will be. I don't think theoretically everything's going to expire and just go back to what the tax laws were back in 2016.
Right.
I don't see that happening. So
right.
We'll be under some new set of rules, right?
Okay.
And so we'll see. About half the states in the country, so probably the ones in the higher tax brackets, have enacted a program like this. So
okay.
If you're in California, you definitely want to do AB 150. If you have profit in the business, you know, we want to take that. If you're in another state, you know, check into it, whether or not you qualify. We've got folks in other states who we are taking advantage of it for.
Okay.
Most other states are lower tax brackets than California. So the numbers are smaller, but it's still meaningful.
Okay. So ask your CPA about that one.
Yep.
Even they might be. See, this happens all the time with me and you guys and Mun.
Right.
Is I ask about this stuff and you're like, yeah, Justin, we already did that.
Yeah, we took care of it for you. Yeah.
So I'm like,
well,
okay,
and
cool.
This one, you know, California is an interesting, obviously, you know, people like to bash on California for being a bit, say that's hard to do business in and things like that.
Yeah.
And there are definitely some challenges to it. But there are a lot of programs like this one that, you know, you got to jump through hoops. There's other stuff, there's training grants, and there's other stuff out there. If you jump through the right hoops, there's R&D credit. California does R&D credit as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you jump through the right hoops, you can actually be in okay shape in Cal,
right.
You know, as a business owner here in California, there's other liability with employees and all that kind of stuff. You know,
of course.
It's all challenging.
Yeah.
But you know, when you do this kind of stuff. So with this credit, to be clear, if you haven't taken advantage of it for this year, it's too late.
Okay.
So the way it works, again, silly hoops to jump through. Essentially, there's a minimum you have to send in by June 15th.
Okay.
And then the rest of you want to get it sent in by the end of the year. So it is too late for this year, but it's something we want to be thinking about now for 2024.
Okay.
We can absolutely take advantage of it.
Got it. All right. And then the last one I have on my list, although you might have a bigger list than me, is the tip credit.
Yeah.
What is the tip credit?
Yeah, so that's a federal credit.
Okay.
And functionally, it's a credit that every owner who, let's take a step back, anybody who has a restaurant or a bar has tipped employees.
Okay.
In hospitality industry.
Yeah.
you know, years.
The argument now is that everybody on Earth has a tipped somebody, right? Isn't that the tip? If you read the news right now, apparently everybody gets tips.
Go on. Well, that's actually why I specified, because so, like a hairdresser, something, if you that doesn't qualify, but it's hospitality only.
Okay.
This credit, but essentially, years ago, and this is, gosh, 15, maybe 20 years ago, the IRS kind of went looking around and said, hey, you know, tips are supposed to be taxable income, but we got all these servers and bartenders that they're not reporting it, and we know that.
And we can't fix that.
We can't go after them. We can't fix that. What are we going to do? We're going to go after the business owners. So we're going to say, hey, now, business owner, it's now your responsibility to make sure this is getting reported.
Right.
In order to incentivize that to work a little bit, and also make sure, because there's payroll taxes that are being missed, right?
Yeah.
And then make sure it's equitable. There's a credit that's associated with that. And functionally what the credit is every time you report your employee's tips, it shows up on their payroll, and a little bit of payroll taxes gets taken out.
Yeah.
This is not money you paid your employees. You are not liable for the employer portion of those payroll taxes.
Okay.
And so therefore you get a credit equal to that amount. So I look at it as with our employee, you know, with our clients who, you know, are paying payroll every 2 weeks or whatever, you know, you're making a very small estimated tax payment every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Every time you run your payroll. You know, honestly, when we review tax returns, 50% of the time, maybe less than 50, but sometimes it feels like 50 sometimes, that's being missed. And so that's thousands of dollars that are getting, you know, flushed down the toilet.
Yeah.
And people just don't realize, again, money you're already spending, it's right there. It's just sitting there waiting for you.
Right.
And let's go and get it. There's some limitations about when you can use it and things like that, but it carries forward. If you don't use it, it accumulates. All these credits, R&D does, all these credits accumulate and carry forward.
Got it.
In general, with some limitations. And so, you know, you want to take advantage of them.
So you found some where they maybe hadn't been doing that for years.
Oh, totally,
and you're able to go back and collect.
Yeah. Well, federally you can go back 3 years and amend.
Three,
and so we'll
okay.
go back and amend and, you know, we get some nice checks back. It's a great way to, you know, to you know, help a business owner out.
Yeah. It does make sense. So I've been in this business for a long time. Most of my life I've worked in hospitality.
Yeah.
And so I can remember the time when employers switched to some of my tips are going to be on my paycheck, or
yep.
at least
totally.
Claim
yep.
there.
Yep.
And it clearly was right around this time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When the IRS said, no, you guys are going to have to figure this out.
Yep. Yeah. When I was in college, I did some, you know, some food service industry jobs. And I remember, you know, you kind of get trained by the other, you know, the other servers. You're like, okay, so at the end of that, you go clock out, and they're going to ask you how much cash tips you got, and you always say zero. I'm like, but why?
How can I do that?
Just trust me, it's zero. They got the credit cards. You're fine.
Right.
Okay, and that, you know, that's what it was about. So obviously, you know, you want your employees to be reporting all of it. But
of course,
regardless, you know, you're paying some payroll taxes on that you shouldn't be. And so let's make sure we go back and get credit for that.
Got it. Okay, that's a good one to ask your CPA about, too.
Absolutely.
All right, anything else we want to be aware of when we're worried about taxes?
You know, those are the biggies. There's a lot of stuff out there, but those were the biggies. You know, we've got some folks when we think about buying new equipment or investing in, you know, TIs and things like that. You know, a lot of clients are taking advantage of bonus depreciation or the special depreciation allowance. That's reducing every year from here on out, and so it's just something to be aware of that.
Okay.
You know, with equipment, tanks, things like that, we can still take what's called Section 179. And so really, if you're buying a piece of equipment, likely if you have profit, we're going to be able to write off most of that in the year of. Bonus depreciation rules are a little bit different. And so sometimes you could write off more than you could otherwise. That's starting to reduce. So it's just something you want to have the conversation before you go out and buy something, assuming I'm going to be able to write this all off, a new van or something like that, or we're going to do a big build out. You just want to make sure you have that conversation. So,
okay.
You know, rules are constantly changing. We're actually in a little bit more stable period. The COVID years, of course, were ridiculous for how much the rules were changing constantly.
Yeah.
We've hit some stability, but as I mentioned, you know, most of these tax laws are set to expire here in a couple of years. So
sure.
We're going to be seeing some big changes again.
So that was kind of a sort of a final question I had for about your profession as a CPA.
Yeah.
So my dentist, who everybody knows, he's from the show, Doc. As a doctor, as a medical professional, he has to go to a certain amount of hours of training every year to stay up on what's new.
Yeah.
Well, tax law is insanity. The size of that book, you know.
Yeah, it's not a book, it's a room.
It's a room, right? What do you have to do as a professional to stay on top of things?
Yeah.
Is it self-guided? Do you just
I get a newsletter.
right. But are there rules?
I
like
meditate
you have to go
about
to,
it.
I bet.
No, absolutely there are rules. Yeah, so we're required to do, actually it's 80 hours of continuing education every 2 years.
Every 2 years, okay.
So it's pretty significant. And
but even that's probably not enough for your job, because you want to stay on top of things even more than that.
Yeah,
like, I'm going to fire you if you miss the R&D credit.
Right.
So,
yep. Yeah, no, there's a lot out there. And, you know, it's funny, right before kind of, right before COVID happened, I was kind of reflecting on the profession. And, you know, one of the things I was, you know, I'm really grateful I'm in a profession where things are constantly changing and updating and things like that. Cause there are other, you know, other professions can be a little more stagnant.
Yeah.
Although if you're really into anything, obviously, you know, there's always updates, but
yeah,
you know, I was like, I was like that. And then COVID hit and you're like, I'm so tired. I'm, you know, I've learned so many and forgotten so many rules for these little things that popped up and then died. And then, you know, and, or even just bills that were proposed. Here's how PPPs, I mean, the initial PPP proposals relative to what we actually landed on.
Right.
Totally different. Same with ERC, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, there's a constant amount of continuing education that goes on with myself. And then, you know, we've got staff and so we're constantly training them and there's a whole process for bringing people up, teaching them how to do what we do and a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. So it's, you know, we try to make it feel and look pretty automatic, but it's a heavy lift.
And then like, do you have access to more resources than me? So if I ask you kind of a question you don't know,
yeah,
are you and your staff just Googling it like I'm going to do?
Chat
or GPT. is there like a place that only CPAs can call?
Well, I mean, you could have access to, yeah, we have research softwares. Yeah, for sure. So
you do.
You could have access to them too, but you're not going to pay for it. But,
right.
It is, you know, there's a lot of training that goes into just learning how to navigate. You know, we've got the tax code. In our case, we've got the tax code. Then you have the regs on top of that. Then you have court cases on top of that.
Okay.
Then you have IRS notices. Like there's all these layers, right? And you know, as you know, it's very complex. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into some of these decisions.
Okay.
And some of the stuff behind the scenes for sure.
But you're probably getting alerts, like you said, alerts and notices pretty constantly.
We get daily updates on stuff and then weekly and things like that. And like I said, you know, we're doing very regular continuing education as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you've mentioned it in this interview, but I've also heard it on the news a bunch.
Yeah.
So Trump made a bunch of tax changes that are going to expire.
Yeah.
Like what is that and when is
technically
that?
Technically, he didn't make them. You know, Congress did when he was, but you know.
Which is what I thought.
Yeah. But yeah.
Call it whatever.
Yeah.
But they expire.
Yes.
Do all tax changes expire? I mean, I know this is probably a complicated question.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. The reason that these ones expire is basically comes down to budget.
Okay.
And essentially, in order to get in order to get a new budget to pass, which includes the tax provisions, you have to meet certain deficit thresholds.
Okay.
And in this case, everything's always actuarial over 10 or 20 years or whatever it is. And in this case, in order to make, because they significantly cut corporate tax rates, they implemented something called the Section 199A deduction, which is significant for all of our clients. We, you know, I'm assuming everyone's taking advantage of that, but you should be, right? These sort of things. So they significantly cut those rates.
Okay.
Because they cut tax revenue so much, they had to figure out something to be able to get this squeezed through. That SALT limitation is part of it. Well, we're going to cap everybody's, you know, SALT deduction, and that's going to increase revenues on you know, this segment of the population. They're going to increase their tax bills by X.
Okay.
By and large, most of our clients were better off after this, even though some of the stuff sounded not so good.
Yeah.
They cut the top individual rate as well. They changed the state tax limits, all sorts of stuff. Well, in order to make that work, in order to pay for it, right, and not need, I think otherwise they would have needed a super majority in Congress.
Yeah.
In order to make that work, they set an expiration date on it.
Okay. But presumably, whoever is in next is going to either extend those or make new ones that work or fit.
Well,
right?
My expectations, we'll see some sort of a hybrid of, okay, we're going to keep these things. You know, people, once you give them something, it's very hard to take it away, right?
Sure.
From a political standpoint, I suppose. And so, yeah, we'll see some sort of a hybrid of those sorts of things. Likely, however, you know, but I've been saying this for a while, but it seems likely that overall tax rates are going to rise. Right, the corporate rate used to be 34% for a C corporation. They dropped it down to 21%. That's a massive cut, right? And so that's where most of it went. You know, the top rate for individuals was like 39.5. Now it's 36.5. You know, so that was smaller, but you know, some of those cuts. So we'll see some of that stuff rolled back, and then we'll see other programs, you know, implemented and things like that.
It's
going to be just a whole new set of rules, basically.
Okay. Right.
In summary,
keeping you employed.
What we're really hoping for is that the rules are implemented in the year in which they are effective, because it's happened to us multiple times in the last, you know, decade that I've really been doing this, a little bit longer, but it's like we finish playing the game and then they pass the laws. And so, you know, we're projecting, okay, we think, you know, here's the law that's, you know, here's the bill that's in Congress. Here's what we're hearing is going to be passed. December 31st hits and they haven't decided. And then all of a sudden in February, we find out what the rules for the prior year. That's happened multiple times. And so it's likely that that'll happen again. And so that's when you want somebody who's really just got their eye on their ball, on the ball, and saying, here's where we think it's going. If it doesn't, here's what'll happen. And at least you can make some informed decisions, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, we can't predict the future. And what I've seen time and time again is that, you know, the bills that we see proposed by the time it actually becomes law on the president's desk are so different. It is difficult to kind of say, okay, it's through the House. Sure. We kind of know what it is. But you know, you gotta just be paying attention and be working with people who are paying attention to stuff like that.
Well, and you guys were always great about that too. And in fact,
you,
I remember this, the very words you just said. You've said to me on multiple occasions, like, "Hey, we don't." It had a lot to do with PPP and all those changes. You would kind of constantly say, like, "Look, I'm not telling you this is set in stone, but this is where we see it going."
Right.
And it did allow me to make some informed decisions, even trusting, right, like, "Okay, this might change.
It may not work, but here's the best we know today." Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, Lou. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Do you want to give out your email? You want people to reach out to you?
Yeah, that'd be totally fine. Yeah, yeah.
All right, go
ahead. So it's lpc@muncpas, okay, muncpas.com. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions or, just want to, yeah.
There you go. Yeah,
fact check me.
Talk beer.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Send me some beer. That's good, too.
All right.
Yep.
Well, I know some other breweries that you work with. Everybody's a big fan, cool, and I am, too. So thanks again for sharing the knowledge.
Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And, okay, so from one dummy to hopefully not a bunch of dummies listening, get a good CPA. So and a good bookkeeper, by the way. And sometimes they can act as the same entity, the same organization. But, yeah, just because you can do it yourself doesn't mean you should. Especially right now. Well, thanks for tuning in with us. I appreciate it. Thanks to all of our sponsors. Hey, don't forget about the 21st Amendment. They've got their new Fireside Chat Winter Ale out right now. Go to 21st-amendment.com and check it out. Visit all our sponsors. They love you, and so do I. All right, everybody. Take care of yourselves and your beer. The Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.